This is CBS Eye on the World. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman. It is happy birthday anniversary, 15 years behind the black, especially looking at commercial space, which tends to dominate the story. Once upon a time, a mere 5 or 6 years ago, commercial space was rare, at least in the headlines. Now it's routine in all directions, and the company named Axiom has reason to celebrate. Bob, a very good evening to you. A commercial manned mission to ISS, unimaginable 10 years ago. What's happened, Axiom?
Yes, John, but I do want to mention that I am doing a fundraiser for the 15th anniversary of Behind the Black, and your donations and subscriptions would really be appreciated from your listeners. They've always been very generous, and I really appreciate it. It keeps me going, pays the bills. Axiom, it's another commercial space operation. They pay the bills. They launched their fourth manned tourist mission to ISS 2 weeks ago, and the mission returned to Earth this week after spending 18 days in space and 14 days at ISS. It was launched on a Falcon 9 rocket in the fifth Dragon capsule SpaceX has built for its fleet of manned reusable capsules. This one they dubbed Grace. That's the name they gave it. It's interesting that now SpaceX has a fleet larger than the shuttle fleet ever was, five craft compared to just four for the space shuttle at its biggest. So this mission was up at ISS. They were there. They came back, splashed down off the Atlantic. The three passengers on board, there was a commander, Peggy Whitson, former NASA astronaut that now works for Axiom, but the three passengers were government astronauts from Poland, Hungary, and India. And these three astronauts, these three nations have not had anybody in space in more than four decades. Each one of them had flown a single astronaut on various Soyuz missions with the Soviet Union to their Salyut 6 and Salyut 7 stations back in 78, 80, and 84. So this was their chance to get back in space. And who made it possible? Not a government, a private company, Axiom, and another private company, SpaceX. As I note, I'm behind the black. If you watch the live stream at the link I provide of the splashdown, you have to remind yourself that no person you see on screen is a government employee. This is all government employees of either SpaceX or Axiom. It's entirely private operation, except for the three government astronauts from those three countries. With no government involved at all with an actual landing of a spacecraft, it says to me, who needs NASA for space flight? This clearly indicates it's not required at all, John.
You said the Atlantic. I want to make sure we get it right. It
was No, you're right. That's right. My mistake. That was just, it was off the coast of California in the Pacific that they landed.
And Axiom now is established as a place, as a go-to place to get to ISS. Is that correct?
Well, what Axiom is trying to do is they're actually a space station company. They're trying to build a space station. And what these flights do is it demonstrates their ability to manage and fly such missions. When they build their space station, they're going to be flying people up and down. They want to be able to work with NASA. And so they're demonstrating that. And the purpose of this is that all four consortiums that are competing to build space stations, they're all developing their situation now to win the big NASA contracts that will be issued to build the station. That's what they're trying to sell themselves as, and that's what Axiom's purpose. That's what its purpose here was.
When you reported this, Bob, it occurred to me that I've never asked about the splashdown. It used to be the 20th century NASA. It would land and a Navy helicopter would show up. They'd take the astronauts back and then they'd haul the capsule to a carrier. How do they do it now?
Well, SpaceX keeps it simple. First of all, they don't land out in the middle of every Pacific where it takes a lot of traveling. They land as close to the coast as possible. When it lands, there's a helicopter. Divers dive in. They also send a boat over. They secure the capsule in the water. They have a specially built boat that they use that has a crane at the back of it. And so they move the boat over to the spacecraft. the crane lifts it up and puts it down in what they call a nest. It's actually a place designed to hold the capsule. And then they very carefully open the capsule, and the crew comes out. And that's basically how SpaceX does it. They keep the fish in very small. And the idea is to land close to the coast so they don't have the long trip back. And that's the way it's done.
So the capsule remains shut until it's on the deck.
That's correct. And it's much safer that way, of course.
Yeah,
they stay inside the capsule. And then that way when they come out, if it's a short mission like this, they come out of the capsule and they walk away. If they've been up for 6 months or so, then they very carefully will give them the option, and they usually do, to move off on a stretcher because they're adapting to re-enter the Earth's gravity.
There's a debate about tracking satellites. Why?
Okay, so under Trump's first administration, he established under NOAA an office that would eventually take over tracking satellites, commercial and military. The military has been doing this since day one with Sputnik and actually does a very, very good job. But there had been requests by the industry to create a special commercial office to do this because the military's focus is not necessarily tracking satellites for, you know, make sure they're not in the way of each other or they track their changes. It has to do with security. So they wanted a commercial office to do this. The Trump administration established that office back in its first term, but it was very slow getting going. And so it still hasn't gotten really going. And so the new Trump budget that was proposed, he was cutting that office. He says, look, it's redundant. We already have the military doing this. A coalition of 450 space companies had now submitted letters to both the House and Senate begging Congress not to kill that funding. You know, it might be that there's a legitimate reason to have this operation done by a civilian agency, but once again, I'm not sure it makes sense in this. It's a redundancy, and so the question is, do we spend that extra money when we're in a debt? And so that's the question. I don't know what the right answer here is. It seems to me that it might be redundant. We could save the money, but the industry wants it. I don't know where the solution is.
Bob, the idea of the government saving money.
Look, an attempt to save money, to cut spending, is a step in the right direction. It happens very rarely, but at least here there seems to be, on the Trump administration's part, an attempt to save money. The Congress, of course, is probably not going to go along with it because everyone wants the budget to be saved, but nobody wants their favorite programs cut, so no, nothing ever gets cut.
I have no comment. We go to...
Yeah.
The California Coastal Commission, it's been some weeks. Bring us up to date, Bob, what the controversy is.
All right. Well, so in October of 24, the Space Force submitted a new launch plan for Vandenberg, which included a significant increase in launches for SpaceX. And they did this to the Coastal Commission, the California Coastal Commission, as a courtesy, because it's a military base, it doesn't have to get their permission. And the Coastal Commission is supposedly supposed to manage the coast of California to make sure its environment is good, it's good for the public, et cetera, et cetera. And they've always done this, and the Coastal Commission works with them, and they try to cooperate to try to minimize impact to the coast. But the Coastal Commissioners, they didn't seem interested in any of the real issues that their statutory authorities involved. They disapproved this new plan. No authority on the Space Force. They've ignored it. But they disapproved it not because there was any environmental issues, but because they don't like Elon Musk. I'll quote the Commissioner Gretchen Newsom, who said at that meeting, Elon Musk is hopping about the country, spewing and tweeting political falsehoods and attacking FEMA while claiming his desire to help the hurricane victims with free internet access to the internet. And other commissioner also said she hates Musk, and we shouldn't approve anything related to Musk. So that's a ludicrous situation. And of course, immediately, SpaceX sued. It sued because you can't, even though it has no force of law, the Coastal Commission's decision, to even make a decision based on Musk's political opinions, that's just illegal. So they sued. Well, that suit has been, the judges have ruled the suit can go forward, But in a more recent ruling, the judge narrowed SpaceX's lawsuit against the Coastal Commission. It can still go forward, but he said they cannot sue for issues of First Amendment and due process of the commission, and they can't sue the individual missions because, of course, the government employees, they're immune. The reason they can't sue for First Amendment is because it's not SpaceX, it's not Elon Musk who's suing it, it's SpaceX. And their statements against Elon Musk doesn't affect SpaceX's freedom of speech. However, they can continue to sue for biased attempts, quote, biased attempts to regulate space activity. And so that's what they're going to continue to do. And I surely it's going to cost the Coastal Commission money, this whole thing.
Varda, what is that, Bob?
This is big news because this is profit in space, and there's very clearly a lot of investment capital who sees big profit in space here. Varda is a company that it builds capsules that it gets launched into space. They're up there for a period of time to do in-space manufacturing of some kind or experiments of some kind for profit. And then the capsule comes back down to Earth, is safely recovered, and anything inside it that's been manufactured can be sold as a product. And they already did. They've already done three flights. The first flight, they actually tested manufacturing pharmaceuticals in weightlessness. This has been a clearly profitable concept since the 80s. And in fact, McDonnell Douglas came very close to doing profit pharmaceuticals in orbit during the shuttle era, but they got blocked when the shuttle Challenger collapsed and was destroyed, and Reagan ruled no more commercial things on the shuttle. So here Varda is doing this, and it's making profit, and it's now raised $187 million in private capital. That's a lot of money, and that's bringing its total cash on hand to $329 million, a lot of cash. There's a lot of people who see there's money to be made in pharmaceuticals made in orbit because the weightlessness allows the pharmaceuticals to be more efficient and pure. And so there's money to be made, and a lot of these pharmaceuticals have to do with HIV and other important diseases. And so this is per capita space. Varda has already launched four times, and it's got its fourth capsule in orbit, and a fifth is expected to launch by the end of the year. And so this is money to be made in space, John.
Bob, as I recall, there was an issue about contamination early on, or something held it back.
The issue had to do with bureaucracy, John, not contamination. Varda initially wanted to land its capsules in the United States in a military test range in Utah. That's a place that NASA capsules have landed before, bringing back samples from asteroids and interstellar materials. So they had no trouble getting approvals to do it, a NASA return. But somehow Varda wanted to do it. It had a capsule in space, and neither the FAA or the Air Force Range could get their act together to release, give them permission. So they had their capsule had to stay up an extra 6 months. They don't want to do that. So they switch. They now land in Australia at a test range there because they were able to get quick permission. And they have a deal for, I think, like 10 years now to continue to land there. And so that's the story behind that.
We go to India, which is made up of independent states that sometimes cooperate with Delhi, sometimes don't. In this instance, it's an Indian state that's made a decision about space. What is it, Bob?
Yes, this is actually the third Indian state that has announced its own space policy. And all these Indian states actually are announcing space policies to encourage private enterprise and in line with the Modi government's national space policy. And so now the previous two states, one was where they plan to build a space fort, and another one is where there's a lot of space industry, no spaceports though. But this third Indian state that just announced its space policy, it's called Andhra Pradesh, and it's where India's main spaceport, the one they've been using for decades. The policy here is to create basically industrial parks near the spaceport that would encourage private enterprise. And this is inconsistent with the other space policies. They're trying to develop industry within the space market. The question I have is the design of this whole setup. It sounds very bureaucratic, so it's a question whether or not it will really do what it's supposed to do. But the trend in India continues to go towards private space, and that's a good thing.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. This is 15th anniversary of Behind the Black. Your donations and subscriptions and attention most appreciated.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.